Some say we should not want to know, nor should we ask, what's in the Cheerios. Others say we should want to know and should ask. And so we ask, should General Mills reveal whether its Cheerios contains GMOs?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 955th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in St. Petersport who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
I have a question for you, Dave. Yep, I do. The question is, You go shopping for cereal for your children for breakfast. On the shelves, you find two boxes of Cheerios. One that says nothing and the other except Cheerios. And the other says Cheerios, but it also says no GMOs. Both being relatively the same price, which one do you take home?
I take home the one that is lower priced.
The lower price, but They're both relatively the same price.
I take the one that's lower price. I would prefer to have non-GMO food, but, you know, the price is ultimately the bottom line for me.
Okay, fair enough. And that is the point. Folks, if you knew the cereal contained genetically modified organisms, would you buy that toasted oat goodness of Cheerios? Apparently, some would not, because General Mills has announced it will begin selling a line of Cheerios that contain no GMOs. To date, the food industry, working through organizations like the Grocery Manufacturers Association, has spent upwards of $100 million to convince consumers to vote no on GMO labeling laws in California and Washington. In each state, the $100 million won the vote. Though no GMO labeling laws has yet passed to force its hand, General Mills has agreed to sell a line of Cheerios labeled GMO-free. This capitulation would seem to indicate a decided turn in the war over whether foods containing GMOs should be labeled as such. Industry's big bucks may be winning the battles, but losing the war. And so we ask, should General Mills reveal whether its food contained GMOs? Here to help us cook up an answer, we have Gregory Conco. He is the executive director and senior fellow for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Gregory, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much for having me on the show today, Michael.
Pleased to do so. Hey, you know, being the executive director and senior fellow, does that mean you get to have all the fun?
Sometimes it means I get to have none of the fun.
Well, what is a senior fellow? How does it compare to being an executive director? What does that mean?
Well, for about the last dozen years or so, I have been a senior fellow. Is my title as a researcher in our policy program. A couple of years ago, I was promoted into the ranks of management. So as executive director, I deal with a lot of the day-to-day management of the policy staff and make sure that everyone is doing what they say they're doing. So it's a lot of busy work, and I certainly prefer my senior fellow role to my executive director role.
There you go. So, well, we'll turn to your senior fellow role today and delve into the question of labeling. But first, I'd like to ask you, what on earth do you mean by competitive enterprise?
We are a small not-for-profit organization that promotes free market solutions to regulatory policy issues. We tend to believe that government regulation is appropriate only when there are substantial failures in the marketplace that provide the appropriate information for consumers to make choices that they need.
Kind of laissez-faire kind of people, right?
You could describe us like that, yes. We don't oppose regulation per se, but we want to make sure that it is narrowly focused and on achieving a specific governmental purpose that is reasonable.
Good. Well, we always ask, Gregory, who pays the way? So who pays the way for the Competitive Enterprise Institute?
We receive, it's a nonprofit organization, so we receive contributions primarily from individuals and charitable foundations. The point I suspect you're getting at is we do get about 20% of our funding for the entire institution from corporate or other business sources.
Okay. Well, we always ask, and it's always good to know, you know, where the money comes from, no matter who's doing the talking, so that's why we always ask. Well, I saw an article that you co-authored in the Wall Street Journal, and it was entitled, General Mills Has a Soggy Idea for Cheerios. And I thought, oh boy, this sounds like a good issue to put on the table for the Food Chain Radio program. So what exactly is General Mills' soggy idea?
The company at the beginning of the year, early January, announced that it was going to start labeling its original whole oat Cheerios as produced without genetically modified ingredients. It announced that it has no objection on safety grounds to genetic engineering or biotechnology, but that it believes that some consumers may actually prefer to have a non-GM option. Mm-hmm. At the same time, General Mills made clear that that sourcing non-genetically engineered ingredients was actually going to be a fairly expensive proposition.
Before we go there, could we back up just a little bit? Because you said something that kind of captured my attention, and that was whole oats. And if Cheerios is a whole oat cereal, I don't even think we're genetically engineering oats yet, are we?
Not genetically engineering oats, although essentially every variety of oats that are grown commercially in the world today are genetically modified. That's one of the things that I tried to point out in the article when we're writing about this particular issue. And we can discuss that in a moment. But it's also important to recognize that that the whole oat Cheerios has a very small amount of corn starch and sugar beet sugar that are ingredients in whole oat Cheerios.
Okay, so that would be the source of the genetically modified organisms then.
That's right.
The sugars.
The genetically engineered ingredients, so, yeah, just okay. A very small amount in that particular product. So at the same time, General Mills has chosen not to remove the genetically engineered ingredients from, say, Honey Nut Cheerios or Apple Cinnamon Cheerios or anything.
Is that because they have a lot of sugar?
It's largely because they have a lot of other ingredients, including sugars, but things like starches and cooking oils that would be derived from a genetically engineered crop plant.
Then I guess we have to ask, why is it a soggy idea? It would seem like if that's what consumers want, why would it be a soggy idea?
Sure, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to discuss this, because I don't object to food producers choosing to use or not use various ingredients in order to appeal to consumers. I think it's unfortunate, though, that General Mills chose to do this in this particular way. On the one hand, just a couple of months ago, General Mills was explicitly targeted, and Cheerios were explicitly targeted by a couple of environmental activist groups for a no GMOs Cheerios campaign. General Mills said explicitly that we're not doing this because of activist pressure, but I think the timing makes it quite curious, and I'm disappointed that General Mills would feel, in a sense, bullied. But even if it was, in fact, only a response to consumer interest, I think the bigger problem is that General Mills is doing this and labeling its product in a way that there's a lot of consumer confusion about biotechnology, what it is, how it works, how it relates to the kind of genetic modification that breeders have been doing for centuries. And the way that General Mills is going about labeling whole oat Cheerios, I think, is going to add to that consumer confusion rather than clear anything up.
Wow. So you think that by, I guess it's kind of like a little capitulation, is it not, when they're, you know, they have some small consumer groups baying at their heels, as it were, and they say, well, okay, if this is what you want, this is what we'll give you. I guess that's, I don't quite understand what the difference is between giving the consumers want and capitulating to the to a consumer group. So maybe we can pick that up when we get back from this break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, we're talking about General Mills' decision to label its Cheerios, some of its Cheerios at least, as being non-GMO. Questions we're going to work with today is, why is the food industry spending so much money to avoid labeling GMO foods? What will General Mills accomplish by selling a line of GMO-free Cheerios? And finally, and most importantly, what should consumers know and not know about the contents of the food they eat? Food Chain Radio, I'm Michael Olson, Gregory Conco, Executive Director and Senior Fellow of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, or on the forums at metrofarm.com. Do stay tuned. We will be right back with Cheerios.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Hello out there. General Mills has a soggy idea, which was to label some of its lines of Cheerio cereals as being GMO-free. Question is, why was it a soggy idea? That's the question we have with Gregory Conco of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Isn't General Mills just trying to compete by labeling its line of Cheerios as being GMO-free, Gregory?
Well, certainly that's what General Mills is saying, and to some extent we are seeing a legitimate, genuine consumer demand for non-genetically engineered ingredients, non-genetically engineered foods in the marketplace. And in fact, there are countless food producers throughout the country that have been for many years putting labeled non-genetically engineered products on grocery store shelves. The timing of General Mills' announcement, though, it coinciding with pressure from an activist campaign, is, as I said earlier, unfortunate, because I think General Mills not only was trying to appeal to consumers, it certainly is trying to do that, but it felt pressured into doing this because of an activist campaign intended to scare consumers away from Cheerios with genetically engineered ingredients in them, when in fact every credible scientific body that's ever looked at the technology has concluded that it's at least as safe as conventional breeding methods.
Mm-hmm. Does everybody agree with your last statement?
Does everyone agree with my last statement? No, but I think most credible scientists would.
Okay. With respect to those activist groups, do you think they eat Cheerios?
Well, I think some of them may. Most of them probably are not regular consumers of large commercial brand products like that. I suspect that a lot of them are buying labeled certified organic products, labeled natural products. Whether they are or are not consumers of Cheerios, I think General Mills' decision almost certainly reflects concern that activists would be out in the marketplace trying to deliberately scare other consumers away from their products. modification is.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's certainly a lot of that. And in that regard, it's a very new technology, a new in terms of, you know, history. It's a very, very new technology. I had the opportunity last year to speak at the International Bio Convention in Chicago. I was placed on a panel with members of the president of the American Soybean Association, the American Corn Growers, the American Hog Raisers, and then me. I don't know why they invited me other than, you know, maybe they were looking for a laugh or something, but I guess I was there to ask a question. And so the question I asked of these people was, you know, the audience was filled with biotech engineers and some people from the largest biotech companies in the world were there. And I just told them that you folks out there have developed a marvelous new technology. You've made it possible for farmers to grow crops without weeds and without pests. And having been a teenage herbicide myself and know the drudgery of, you know, hoeing weeds under the hot summer sun, I can truly appreciate, you know, that effort. And, you know, you've made it possible for one farmer now to grow 1,000 acres of crops with no bugs and no pests. And if that's not a miracle, I don't know what is. And so you're very happy with this technology and you're very wealthy because of it. That being said, what about the other side of the equation? You know, what are the consumers of your products getting other than foods that have been literally drenched in herbicides and foods that have had every cell of their being infused with a pesticide? And so my question to these people was that, you know, sooner or later, consumers are going to get to wondering about the efficacy of this incredible new technology and ask what's in it for us other than foods that have been drenched in herbicides and infused in pesticides. And so what happens when consumers start asking that question? How are we going to answer that, Gregory?
Well, there's a lot to unpack in your question, and I think I would begin with questioning your assumption that in some way genetic engineering is the first time or the only way in which plant breeders can produce a crop variety that is tolerant to an herbicide.
I didn't say that. I said it was...
No, you did not, and I'm not trying to twist your words, but your question implies or leads, I think, an uneducated or an uninformed layman to make assumptions that even the loaded term that you use, a pesticide infused in every cell of the plant.
Why is that incorrect?
It's not incorrect, but again, it's part and parcel to what plant breeders do, regardless of the technology that they're using. Plant breeders are constantly tinkering with the genetics of crop plants.
And have been forever, right?
And have been forever. They are introducing, in fact, using non-genetic engineering techniques, introducing new genes that produce new proteins, which is what the Bacillus thuringiensis pesticide is, into crop plants using all sorts of breeding techniques. They're making crops resistant or tolerant to herbicides using a variety of different breeding techniques short of genetic engineering. The premise of your question seemed to suggest that this was something new that maybe consumers should be concerned about.
Wait a minute. It is new in that you can take these traits and stack them up one on top of each other so that a plant can now literally kill bugs and withstand herbicides that is designed to kill all the rest of the plants. So that's new. And furthermore, you can stack those genes up one on top of the other. That's pretty new stuff.
Michael, that's not remotely the case. Plant breeders have been, since at least the 1930s, using, for example, a technique called mutation breeding.
That's correct. I agree.
For the purpose of introducing herbicide tolerance into crop plants. In fact, there, I would venture to guess, as many herbicide-tolerant crop plants on the market today in the United States that are the products of mutation breeding as genetic engineering. So this is not quite new. It is new in the sense that breeders can identify and target specific genes, but that in itself doesn't make it necessarily harmful or risky or anything to worry about. Arguably, that makes it safer because breeders can identify the specific gene. They can know what protein it produces. They can test the protein. They have much greater ability to predict what the ultimate food plant is likely to do, either to the environment or to consumers. And that, I believe, is why the vast majority of scientists who have studied the technology and the processes agree that recombinant DNA technology or modern biotechnology is at least as safe and often safer than conventional breeding.
Okay, let's say it is, for the purposes of this discussion. Then why is industry so afraid of standing up and selling their technology to the consumers? Why are they spending $100 million to convince consumers not to know what's in the food, rather than spending that $100 million to convince consumers that they're getting a really good deal in this genetic technology? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Gregory Conko, and you were talking about the labeling of Cheerios as being GMO-free. You think it a good idea or a bad idea? What would you prefer? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Would love to hear what you have to say. And the question is why doesn't the genetic or the food industry sell itself like the rest of us have to sell ourselves? Right back. What do you think out there? Should General Mills label its Cheerios GMO-free? Well, it seems like if they want to go out and attract or compete for that segment of the audience that wants foods that don't have GMOs, that would be the thing to do. But I'd like to talk a little bit about competition right now with respect to the mind of the marketplace, because that is what the conflict is all about. A couple months ago, I got a call from an attorney at a nearby town who is a very big center of agriculture, at least here in California and around the world. But he asked, hey, did you get the letter? And I said, what letter? And he said, the letter from XYZ Growers. It's a big grower shipper organization. And since I don't have the letter in my hand, I won't give you the name. But at any rate, I said, nope, didn't get the letter. What does it say? And he said, well, it said, if you're losing money to local food, join us in Washington, D.C. And so it seems as though the folks in the industry that manufacture genetically modified organisms are of that mind as well. It seems as though they're tired of competing state to state and have just issued the proclamation that they are going to go to Washington, D.C., and with under the rubric of the Grocery Manufacturers Association, and they're going to have a federal law that will supersede all state laws, so that if consumers go to their states and have a initiative to force the labeling of GMOs, it won't matter because they will have owned the federal government. And with respect to that, I'm just wondering what kind of competition the Competitive Enterprise Institute sees in this kind of competition. Gregory?
Well, as I said at the top of the show, I certainly have no objection to a food producer saying on its product what's in the product, including if that if it's true to say that we don't use genetically engineered ingredients. In fact, there's a recognized First Amendment right for producers to say we don't use genetically engineered ingredients. As I mentioned earlier, there's a booming market out there, tens of thousands of products on grocery store shelves today, and not just in your natural and organic markets, but in common shopping places like Walmart and Food Lion and other grocery stores that say GMO-free or not made with genetically engineered ingredients. I think that's perfectly appropriate. What I don't think is appropriate is forcing manufacturers to say something on their labels about the ingredients that they use that that is not material to consumer health or nutrition.
Okay, is it different than forcing manufacturers not to do something? I mean, it seems like the Grocery Manufacturers Association is going to Washington, D.C. to effect a control of some kind over the whole issue, one way or another. They're gonna go to Washington, D.C. and buy themselves a law, right?
I don't know whether they're going to actually do it. They're going to try, and I would say we don't quite know yet what it is that they're trying to accomplish. What they have announced is establishing as federal policy a law that says states may not enact labeling rules that differ in any way from policies established by the Food and Drug Administration. I would argue that that rule already exists in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act. A federal judge in Southern District of California agrees with me, has already held that a state California labeling law requiring producers to say genetically engineered ingredients is in fact in violation of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. But what the GMA is trying to do is clarify that policy. I think that state-level preemption is perfectly appropriate. If this is an issue that we find sufficiently national in importance that requires the Food and Drug Administration to get involved, our constitutional system provides that some issues are national and regulated by the federal government. Mm-hmm. Other issues are state-level or municipal and regulated by states and municipal governments. But generally, we should disfavor approaches that where there is regulation by both national and state governments, because that gives rise to conflicting directives.
That's certainly true. And by the way, who is in charge of the food safety at the Food and Drug Administration? Is somebody named Michael Taylor, right?
Well, there's an entire division of several hundred scientists at the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. Michael Taylor just happens to be an attorney who is the politically appointed head of that division, but I believe those hundreds of scientists at the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition would argue that they're in charge of food safety.
Fair enough. Let's go to the phones, folks. 800-624-2665, 831-4798. We're going to start with Mary in Santa Cruz. Mary, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael. I think it's really important for the audience to understand that it for the food industry, it's very good for consumers to not understand genetic modified organisms. And so to keep that confusion going benefits them. And I would say that people need to know that GMOs are not produced by cross-pollinating two wheat varieties in order to get a hardier wheat. Nor are they two kinds of horses to encourage offspring with certain traits. Rather, they are engineered and created in a lab where material and genes from one plant or an animal are inserted into a different species. That's the difference, and it's really important to say that. And let me give you an example of why this is a problem. Soybeans were inserted with Brazil nuts genes to get a better flavor. It sounded good, but it was fatal for people who had nut allergies. People need to know.
Thank you. Mary, pretty powerful stuff. Gregory, how do you respond to Mary?
Well, again, there are a couple of things that I'd like to address. It's a very important question that she's asked or issue that she's posed. But I think it's important to recognize that plant breeding has not been solely limited to mating one wheat plant with another, or one corn plant with another for most of the 20th century. And this is long before we got to gene splicing or what we call modern genetic engineering. as we talked about earlier in the program, this mutation breeding, which plant seeds, since at least the 1930s, have been intentionally exposed to X-rays or ionizing radiation for the purpose of spontaneously mutating their DNA. This creates entirely new genes in plants.
It's the same species, though, isn't it? I mean, you're working with the same species.
Yes, but they're entirely new genes, and that is, in fact, because we can't necessarily go in and map the changes that have been made after the fact. This is why scientists, plant geneticists, believe that mutation breeding is more dangerous than genetic engineering. There's also forcible mating that occurs in a laboratory environment that cannot exist in nature, in which a crop plant is forcibly mated with a distantly related wild relative. Wild relatives sometimes known to produce natural toxins.
We're going to have to take a quick break, Gregory. So hold on, to that. We're going to pick you up when we get back. Mary, thank you very much. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, we've got Rosemary, we've got the Owl, we've got a bunch of people. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, what do you think? Do you think General Mills should label its Cheerios line of cereals GMO-free? What will they gain? What will they lose? That's the question on the table today with Gregory Konko from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Gregory, I think I stepped on your toes a little bit there getting out of the show for the break. Would you like to finish your thought there?
I just wanted to point out, but thank you for coming back to that, is that genetic modification is not one technique. It's many techniques. We've been genetically modifying plants in a variety of different ways that can only occur in a laboratory environment since the beginning of the 20th century. And I think this is where the consumer confusion comes in when you're just talking about GMOs and labeling no GMOs. Plants have been genetically modified very radically.
For 10,000
years. Well,
10,000 years.
For 10,000 years by selection breeding or mating one plant of one species with another. But as your caller suggested, a lot of people don't realize what has been going on for the last 100 years in plant breeding and how radically different we've been modifying plants for a very long time, and in fact how safe the technologies are, because we do know so much about identifying what might be potentially hazardous items in products, including the soybean variety that your caller identified that was genetically engineered with a gene from Brazil nut that was identified in testing as potentially allergenic to people who have nut allergies. The product never made it to market because it was weeded out during normal testing.
Well, Rosemary, do you feel safe with genetically modified foods?
No, I don't, Michael. And I have to say, and I'm sorry to say this, I think your guest is very arrogant. For him to make a decision on what I see on the labeling of my food, and I, like many, many consumers, are very oriented to looking on the label to see what it is, to see what I'm buying, is important. I know many other consumers who do the same thing. For him to say that General Mills is scared by a group of protesters, I think is balderdash. And if it's so darn safe, and if it's so darn wonderful, then just tell us what's in it and stop hiding. I find it absolutely reprehensible that this attitude prevails. The way to thwart all of this is simply buy local from your local farmers and your local merchants so you know what you're getting. If I ate cereal, I would buy some Cheerios. I don't. But I would buy them because it is labeled. I look for that non-GMO project on the shelf, and I buy those things all the time. But if after all of these genetic changes that have been made over all of these hundreds of years and all of these hundreds of scientists, and it's so safe, then really, just label it, and we then will make the decision ourselves in the grocery aisle. And I have to go, so I will take my answer off the air. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call. You know, Rosemary brings up a point that I was kind of touching on. The industry is spending hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, to convince people to vote no on GMO labeling. Why don't they take some of that money and tell us what a good deal they're giving us? Gregory?
Well, that's a good question. I'd like to know the answer. Since I don't work for the food industry, I can't tell you. But it is, in fact, something that I've been urging the food industry to do for many years. And I think they could start in dispelling some of these myths about what genetic modification is. As I said, it's not just, you know, when General Mills says Cheerios is going to have no genetically modified ingredients, it's, in fact, lying. Because whole oats, as I mentioned, are the product of most oat varieties on the market today, are the product of what's called wide cross hybridization, a process that can only exist in a laboratory, cannot happen in nature. To say that whole oat Cheerios won't include genetically modified ingredients is not truthful.
Well, why don't they stand up and holler how proudly they are of their products? I mean, why don't they spend some of that $100 million competing? I mean, you're the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Why are these people so afraid of competing?
Well, they're competing on things that...
I don't think they're competing. They're going to Washington, D.C. and buying the government.
And in what way are they buying the government?
The Grocery Manufacturers Association is gathering all of the principal players in the genetically modified organism industry, getting all kinds of cash, going to Washington, D.C., going to pass a law that says no state can force labeling of GMOs. That's what the deal is. Am I wrong?
But how does that inhibit competition? It still would allow producers who don't use genetically engineered ingredients to say it. And as your listener or your caller has already identified, she in fact looks for that no GMOs label when she goes to the grocery store. The fact of the matter is the market is in fact already providing plenty of information for consumers who don't want genetically engineered ingredients to make those choices.
Well, here's a man who should know because he is outstanding in his field. That would be Rory. Rory, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program.
Thank you. Hey, first off, I agree with Rosie. We need to label, and the manufacturers need to label GMO free or whatnot, and let the individual customers decide what they want to do. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I think it's all papayas have a transgenetically deposited plant gene for a virus resistance. And that's a fact. Now, is that harmful? I don't think so. However, Roundup Ready crops, corn, and soybeans, and now alfalfa's in the pipeline, they're doused through the life of that crop with Roundup herbicide, which is being shown to be quite toxic.
Okay, Rory, I'm out of time. Can you hold on through the break here?
Certainly.
Okay,
certainly.
We will be right back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson, with Gregory Konko of Competitive Enterprise Institute. Right back. Well, our good friend Gregory Konko from the Competitive Enterprise Institute says that General Mills has a very soggy idea for its Cheerios line of cereals because it's labeling GMO free. Now, do you think that's a soggy idea, Rory?
No, in fact, I'm usually in agreement with the Competitive Enterprise Institute on many things, and I think this is a very competitive thing that General Mills is doing. They're trying to set themselves apart, and they ought to do it. And the thing is, there aren't differences and nuances in plant breeding. There's classical plant breeding. There are some crosses that are done in the lab, but transgenic engineering is a different story, but it doesn't always have the same results. For instance, the virus-resistant gene that's put in papayas is from another plant. It's a plant gene, and it doesn't result in excessive uses of herbicide on the papaya plant. In fact, it results in none being used. In fact, there's nothing you can treat a virus for once a plant's sick. It's going to have it and be debilitated and die, or just be debilitated. So those kind of transgenic efforts are worthwhile. if we, for instance, found a gene, a plant gene, that would confer disease resistance in strawberries to numerous root pathogens, believe me, we would move in that direction, and we would be gladly labeled, because that would result in the reduction in the use of soil fumigants without any deleterious health effects. But let me finish my point. Yeah. I just want to say that crops that are getting doused in Roundup, and now Dow, Elanco, or Dow is working on 2,4-D-ready plants, is not the way to go. And, in fact, with all this use of Roundup over the years on corn and soybeans, there are now species of weeds that are now, what? Guess what? They're resistant to Roundup. It's not killing them. And this is, we're putting selection pressure on the weed species. The same thing with BT in the corn and soybean crops. It put BT toxin in every cell in that plant, and you're just forcing resistance in the worm population or the moth population that you're trying to control. And voila, pretty soon your BT corn isn't working. You're not getting the corn earworm anymore. You're forcing resistant strains. So to me, there are some advantages, but they need to be forthright, label it. I personally avoid corn. I don't want that. Dr. Don Huber and others have demonstrated there's some problems there. Well, so I'll only buy organic corn chips.
That's a great question. What about the people like Dr. Don Huber, who is
plant pathologist emeritus.
Emeritus, yeah. And he had nobody to buy him off. And he's saying this is not all that safe. How do you respond to that, Gregory?
Well, in Dr. Huber's case, I think it's suspicious that he is unwilling to show his research to any other scientists so that they can verify the data. In fact, you know, one of the hallmarks of scientific research is replicability. If Dr. Huber is not willing to allow another scientist, even another scientist from a public institution, to look at the data and try to replicate his results, it's we should be somewhat skeptical. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying we should be skeptical until the additional research is done. But I want to come back to the point that Rory was making, is that different modifications are, you know, people
you have 20 seconds.
Judge them better or worse. It's worth mentioning that the Food and Drug Administration's current policy on labeling actually says that if a product is changed in a way that actually has a material impact on nutrition or safety, the food manufacturer has to say that on the label.
Okay, we're out of time, but you got that point in. And Greg, thank you so much. I love your point about being skeptical. That's me. I am Michael Olson, and you are Greg Conko. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.